We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
This is Greg Olson, here to tell you about my new podcast, TE1. On the show, I had a chance to talk to my fellow tight ends who have revolutionized the position from an extra lineman to a dual threat superstar. And just like my guests have changed the game, this year, NFLSundayTicket.tv is revolutionizing your NFL viewing experience. Stream all the live out-of-market NFL games every Sunday on your favorite devices and never miss a moment from your favorite players. Visit NFLSundayTicket.tv and use the promo code GREG88 at checkout and get 15% off your subscription. That's NFLSundayTicket.tv and the promo code GREG88. Subscribe to TE1 and get NFLSundayTicket.tv, an unmatched dual threat.
In the Know, the Bourbon Street Shots Podcast. We're your hosts, Shamit Dua and Mason Ginsburg, and this is All Pelicans All the Time.
I say we dig into the questions that the readers, the listeners have, because we got a lot of them, and I think we addressed a good number of them. So do you have one that really sticks out to you? If not, I can kick it off.
I think we got this a couple places, but since we kind of started off pessimistic, let's continue down that path and talk playoffs for next year. So we got a question around, you know, improvements. Look at what Phoenix is doing in the bubble. Looking at the Blazers getting healthy, the Warriors getting healthy. You know, what are the odds of making the playoffs next year? I mean, I feel like we were going to the year, or at least like kind of midseason, thinking, okay, well, when we get healthy, when we get right, this team's got the talent to be a clear playoff team. Well, you know, I don't know if we can say that as strongly now. What do you think?
Oh yeah, I think playoffs are far from guaranteed, especially if they find themselves in a situation where they're like, "Oh, you know what? We're moving on from Drew."
Yep. Yeah.
Especially if that decision is made, this is far from a guaranteed playoff team. Now, am I hopeful? Yeah, I think, you know, there's enough there should be enough talent theoretically to make it. It would depend on if these guys actually gave a shit, but I think it's an entirely possible scenario where the Pelicans end up back in the lottery for sure, because you're looking at, as the person mentioned, the Suns, the Kings are going to want to get better and probably going to get better, but you probably count them out. Minnesota, the Warriors, you got all these teams, and you know, maybe the OKC Thunder fall out, you know, because they lose some of their vets and they make some savvy draft deals, but I doubt it. You know, it's going to be really, really difficult.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the standings in the West, and I think, you know, oftentimes we can look at the West and say there's going to be 10 really good teams, and the rest are just going to be kind of bottoming out and garbage. That's not even – I think almost every team in the West is going to be trying to be – like, because that's usually the problem, right, is that you can clearly identify the top eight teams, and so the Pelicans just got to get lucky and get by one of those teams that we feel like are pretty much locks to make the playoffs. That's not what's going on. I think there are just so many teams that have talent, and it's hard to say the Pelicans are definitively one of the best eight teams. I'm almost wondering if there are any teams going to go the other direction. It's just because of that. And so, like, I mean, you look at a team like Oklahoma City.
I want to chime in here. It's okay. Worth it to go the other direction.
Yeah.
Cade Cunningham.
There we go.
Cade Cunningham is just a phenomenal prospect that every team should be tanking for. I think it's worth it. I mean, obviously the lotto odds are flattened and yada, yada, yada. But next year's draft class is supposed to be really good. All those players that are heading up that G League select team, you know, Jalen Green, Cade Cunningham's going to Oklahoma, or is it Oklahoma State? I forget which one. Yeah. Either way, you know, it's going to be a loaded draft class, so they say. I definitely think there's going to be a team that decides, you know what, let's just dip into this draft here.
Oklahoma City, man. I mean, it probably sounds crazy on the surface because they continue to look really good in the bubble with Chris Paul. But man, like, they're so well positioned for the future. If you can trade Chris Paul and not have to attach assets to him, if you find a team like Hello New York or Charlotte,
I would take Chris Paul in a heartbeat. So still on that, I know we talked about it on the pod,
or New Orleans
many months ago.
Yeah. Do they just kind of totally reverse course and say, we've got the stockpile of assets. Let's see how quickly we can bounce back. If we can tank and get a nice pick in this loaded class, maybe we've only got to hit the reset button for 1 year, and then we can, you know, and then make some quick changes. So
is this year the Spurs finally say, fuck it, you know?
Yeah. 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 That's a good point too. So yeah, I mean, that's a long-winded way of saying playoffs. Pelicans fans, do not think that this team, with all the talent they have, even if they keep Drew, like, there's no guarantee of playoffs. As we always say, the West is just, there's too much talent.
Yeah, no guarantees in the West, and especially if there's injury troubles for the Pelicans, because they have never handled that well.
Yeah, yeah, and of course, once AD leaves, the Lakers will be that'll open up one spot, but that's still not enough. There's still too many good teams.
So a relevant question. This is from Steve Novak's burner account. So, do you think there's any way the Pels can revert to a slower rebuild, or have the expectations already been set too high?
That's a very general question. So, I think we did. Expectations were too high. I mean, expectations are whatever you as an individual put on the team, but also the Pelicans set themselves up like this. I mean, they positioned Drew as an MVP candidate, which I think we all know was to take pressure off of Zion. But still, I mean, you're positioning yourselves as this team who's going to instantly push for the playoffs and be relevant. And so now that this year has happened, can the Pelicans kind of change the mentality, mindset of the fan base? Not that it's super important. They're focused on what's going on the court and how they can eventually become a contender. They care a little bit less about what the fans think, but I think it's an important question, to keep fans invested. I mean, Zion hopefully does that mostly by himself as long as he's on the floor, but But yeah, I mean, I think regardless of whether or not they can, I think that's just going to be the inevitability of things. I don't see a Bradley Beal trade to jumpstart or expedite this timeline or anything. I think if anything, we slow down, we don't speed up.
How dare you?
Sorry.
Don't break my heart, man. Yeah, I mean, I agree. I don't think Griff is going to look at this and be like, you know what, let's just lean all the way into a rebuild. But I do think strategic decisions might be made with Drew and some of the other vets where they're like, hey, we tried this whole vet thing. It didn't quite really work. Let's capitalize on the assets we can capitalize on. And then kind of find our vets elsewhere, fill it around the edges. And so in that scenario, they're still very much going to try to win games. So like a trade that I threw out there, which for the record, I would not do this trade if I were me, but a trade that I threw out there was like, let's say you move Drew to Indiana from Miles Turner, some other salary. So I think I said Doug McDermott and their pick or a couple picks. Let's say it's two picks. You know, that's something that would satisfy the requirement of getting an asset back, also gets a young player back, but also gets a player, you know, that young player can also play and the other guy you get back can also play. So, you know, it rewinds your timeline or it, I guess, extends your timeline because you move Drew, but it also may be a situation where Drew's just way better player than those guys and you're not as good because you didn't fill in the gap. So, you know, I can see scenarios like that. And the Pelicans are again in a position where they're young. Their goal is to compete, but if they don't make the playoffs, then no big deal.
Yep.
What I do think is they're in a situation where they'll never be able to outright tank. As long as Zion is healthy, they're not going to be bad enough to tank, and that is something I'm sure of.
Yeah, I think that's
It's the same thing with AD. Like, the best you can get is maybe the sixth best pick.
Like, yeah, but lottery odds are flattened somewhat. And, like, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I guess it depends on what we see from Zion on the defensive end. Next year, like, if even as transcendently good on offense as he was, and you expect him to improve there, if he doesn't get better on defense and say like you trade Drew Holiday, like this team could be, I think this team could still be one of the worst in the league. It depending on what you do around the roster. I don't want to be too pessimistic, but I think next year you could construct a roster without doing anything too ridiculous that would be in the running for a really nice pick. But That's only because the lottery odds have changed a little bit. I don't think this team could ever get near like the worst record in the league. That's not what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So I've got one from Patrick McQuaid. So he's asking, are you worried about making too much of the mentality in the bubble? So admittedly, it says it's still a small sample size and a completely unique set of circumstances that won't be replicated. So anything that you pick, I think we've hit on some of this in terms of the players just, you know, not caring, but like how much of that do you think is truly, is fixable or slash is just like a thing that happened in the bubble because it was a weird set of circumstances. I know we've kind of harped on these players are who they are, but I do want to make sure that we're properly discussing the uniqueness of the bubble, right?
So, I think I said earlier on the pod, I think the mentality thing existed before the bubble. I think it was a problem at the beginning of the season. Mm-hmm. I think at the core, that's who these guys are. I think it's a person problem, not an environment or a coaching problem. I think it's a situation where Griff misjudge the character of the team. He said we have a bunch of we oriented people. I think that was a misjudgment. I don't think that's the case. I do think the bubble is an environment where everything was under a microscope, so all the flaws are definitely magnified. So they may not necessarily be as big of an issue as they may seem with current recency, but I don't think these are issues that are new. And so, yeah, that's where I'm at, and I still think they need to be addressed. And frankly, I think the team should feel very, very disappointed with how they performed and operated.
Yeah, so I struggle with this a little bit, and so generally speaking, I do agree with you, and I think like we talked about before the question segment of this week's podcast, that we there are some concerns around this topic. What I'm struggling with is understanding, and I don't know if we ever truly understand the impact and the differences that this bubble environment causes, and also the how the external out what's going on in the real world, quote unquote, is impacting things. And so I think that the big picture is that these guys are who they are. But also I don't
know. Mason, I'm going to push back against that because every team in the bubble is dealing with that.
Fair enough.
Every team in the bubble is dealing with that. And the only two teams that have completely fell flat on their face and they look completely disinterested and they don't care about winning and they look not cohesive are the Kings and the Pelicans. And you never want to be in the same bucket as the Kings. You don't. And I tweeted that the Pelicans are playing like a group of players who can't wait to get out of here and post on their Instagram about how hard they're going to be working in the summer.
It was so funny.
And that's what Lonzo Ball did. Immediately after the game, he went on Twitter, he quote tweeted Bleacher Report, and is like, oh, you better post my shit next year too. Okay, dude. You couldn't get up for an elimination game? You couldn't get up for any game in the bubble?
Most passionate he showed was that tweet.
People talk about the team taking on the identity of their coach, and that may be true to an extent, but how often does a team take on the identity of their lead guy, their lead ball handler, their point guard, right? You look at Chris Paul. You look at Damian Lillard. You look at Steph. You look at – you know, you name all these
point guards. Hold on. We both know that's Drew.
Yeah, okay. But you know what I mean.
Yeah.
You know what I mean. And even with Drew, like, where's the passion? Where's the fire, right? So even if you want to say it is Drew and derail me from my Lonzo hate train, then that's fine because it applies to him too.
Mm.
And so I don't agree that the bubble is in this environment where the Pels players just weren't suited for it. I think this is who they are. And if anything, the environment uncovered the cracks that were kind of masked by some really hot three-point shooting from January to February, some really bad opponent three-point shooting from January to February, and beating some very easy teams.
Yeah. So your point is well taken on the fact that the Pelicans were one of the flattest teams in the bubble and they had to deal with what every other team did. But they also are one of the youngest teams, and I think that you saw that some of the vets. I mean, I don't think it's a. Even though I agree with you completely that Drew came up short as well, like he had his own set of problems in the bubble as far as his play. I don't think it was as effort related as some of the other guys. I think you saw JJ Drew busting their ass. I think you saw a lot of the young guys not doing that. And that's a problem to me. And I don't want to say it's just strictly correlated to age, but I do think that the Pelicans roster makeup is somewhat different than many of the other teams. But I say that, and
The Suns are the youngest team in the NBA. And they're balling out right now.
That's because Monty Williams should have never been fired. If you look at the
Pelicans. Clearly there was never a 57-page fire Monty thread on Pelicans talk. Never, ever, ever.
Oh, God. Yeah, the revisionist history on that one is really something.
It's terrible. And the worst part is the same people today, I can find their accounts that are saying Gentry doesn't have plays, he doesn't have his rotations, he's bad at doing X, Y, like development, blah, 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 blah. They said the same shit for Monty.
Buzzword.
Because that's all you guys know how to complain about because you don't know what a real coach does.
Adjustments. What are the words? Adjustments, rotations. I don't know. Those are two of the big ones, but
of course, you know, you've been a fly in Becky Hammond's wall for the last 7 years, so you know exactly how she'll handle it.
Yeah. Okay. I've got another one I wanted to talk about with you, and this is a topic we also started to hit on in the previously around BI and Zion and their fit together in the long term. But Dante Gandolini asks, what type of front court player would you want long term next to BI and Zion? Which obviously presupposes that you're playing BI and Zion at the 3 and the 4/5, and you have another front court player. So I guess my first question is, can you build a team that you feel like is a legitimate threat, maybe not to the title, but to make a very deep playoff run with BI and Zion not playing the 4 and the 5 with another front court guy alongside them? So that's the first question I would ask about that.
I think if you got like prime Al Horford, or like, you know, like early Celtics Al Horford, who was hitting threes, playmaking, mm-hmm. low usage, and defending the rim, that guy is a tremendous fit for those people. I think, you know, a guy like Marc Gasol would even go a long way, you know, a younger version of him. But essentially you want a guy who doesn't necessarily command a ton of usage, can space the floor, can pass, can shoot, and protect the rim. So I do think it's possible to do that, but it requires a tremendous amount of commitment and buy-in from Zion and Ingram on the defensive end. Yeah. I think, you know, ultimately you can have 4 good defenders out there and the 5th guy is Ingram, and that will be good enough. I think that's the dream with Zion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was trying to think of like who the younger guys in the league are right now that I could put with BI and Zion and like create the right and create the roster. And it's like, I was thinking like, man, like Towns, like what level of player do you need? And he's obviously low usage is not something that you can describe Carl Anthony Towns, but I feel like he's made strides defensively. But like, it's hard. It's hard to figure out like who that right player is that would perfectly fit. Like Horford's like, he's a utility player in the sense that he fits with essentially everyone in the front court. So I was trying to like, but also Towns is one of the best players in the league. So that's also unfair.
I mean,
so
I think from a pure talent perspective, Towns would be pretty damn good. Yeah. And they would probably be a contender just because how the hell do you deal with all 3 of those guys?
Yeah.
It'd be a situation where it'd be like LeBron's Cavs, right? With Kevin Love and Kyrie, where they just that season they kind of punted on defense until the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And they just beat the crap out of people because how the hell do you handle LeBron, Kevin Love, and Kyrie?
Yeah.
And I think Towns would be incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. Just interesting thought exercise because, I think conventional wisdom is that Zion's eventually the 5 in crunch time. And so from there, is BI the 3 or the 4 in crunch time, and how do you fill out the rest of the roster?
But here's my hot take with Ingram. Mm-hmm. And this is what's ultimately going to color my perception of him moving forward and long term. I think he is going to be a player that's going to be a tremendous scorer, but I think he's going to be a player that doesn't have the same impact his scoring suggests he might have on the offense. And I think I would readily move him
Just call him DeRozan, man. Just call him DeRozan.
Well, DeRozan, I think he can be better than DeRozan just because he can shoot threes. And so I think there's a lot more value there. But it's almost like AD, where you're like, AD's a fantastic scorer, but he's not making you a top offense by himself. Mm-hmm. And I would, with the case of Ingram, because he's not a big – you know, if it came down to, like, if I had the option between Ingram and Devin Booker, I would take Devin Booker every single day. Because I feel Booker is a guy who can make his teammates better because of the way he operates in an offense.
And he can shoot from half court. No problem, apparently.
Right. And so, if I had, I think perimeter scoring – is can be found in other places. And so if I can get perimeter scoring from my guard positions, I would rather have a 3-and-D player. And what makes Ingram a difficult piece to build around is because he is your wing and he is your leading scorer. So sliding in a 3-and-D player without a true shot creator. I think this is a long-winded way of me saying get Lonzo the hell out of here and put a real point guard, because I think Ingram could work if you had a real point guard. So if you had a real point guard and then you have Ingram and then you have, you know, like an actual wing defender, that's so, like if you had an OG Anunoby, if you had a Mikal Bridges, if that's your perimeter, a point guard, a wing defender, and Ingram, I think that can work. And so you're effectively conceding that Ingram's the two, and he's your basic traditional shooting guard. He's getting out there and he's getting buckets, and that's my best configuration for Ingram. But other than that, if it came down to like Ingram or Towns, I'd pick Towns.
Yeah. We haven't really talked about the whole Lonzo topic yet, and we'd be remiss if we didn't hit that eventually. But just before we get there, like, can you imagine you and I having this conversation, like thinking back to like a year ago and how this team had gone like pretty much a freaking decade without a three, like a small forward with size who is good. Like, this team's had
a decade without a small forward who can really defend.
Fair enough. But
okay, that's disrespectful to Solomon Hill, who at one season was a fine defender and could do literally nothing else on the court.
Yeah, but it's now that we've got it, we're just like, it doesn't fit. Or not it doesn't fit, but just like, we've got to like jump over hoops jump through hoops to figure out how it works. And so it's like, it's so weird. I feel like we can never be happy. That's the Pelicans fan, life of a Pelicans fan summarized.
Yeah. I get it. And I feel like this is going to come off as me being like a massive Ingram hater and not wanting him on the team. And I just think that's not the case. I think I've readily said he's an all-star and he's a max player. I just feel like there's a big conversation to be had with the challenges he presents when it comes to roster building, given his own deficiencies, but also the deficiencies of everyone else on the roster.
Yep. Sundays are coming back in the NFL. With NFL Sunday Ticket.tv, you can stream every live out-of-market NFL game every Sunday afternoon on your favorite devices, plus Red Zone and DirecTV Fantasy Zone channels. Never miss your favorite teams and favorite players. No matter where you live, NFL Sunday Ticket.tv is your key to the most glorious Sundays ever. Use the promo code BLUEWIRE at checkout to get 15% off your subscription. Visit NFL Sunday Ticket.tv and use promo code BLUEWIRE. Have you ever heard of DealDash.com? It's the best, most honest bidding site where you can win things you'd never expect at a price you'd never believe. They have over 1,000 auctions every day on electronics, appliances, beauty products, home decor, and even cars. Here's how it works. It's like an auction, but every item starts at $0 and only goes up 1 cent every time you bid. The kicker is that auction clock restarts after just 10 seconds. That means every time you bid, everyone else has 10 seconds to answer or the item is yours. If you go ahead and buy now, DealDash is offering our listeners an extra 100 free bids upon signup, on top of their other discounts. Go to DealDash.com and use the offer code Pelican or DealDash.fm/Pelican. That's DealDash.fm/Pelican. Yeah. So I don't mean to keep hijacking the list of questions, but I did want to get one because it's pertinent to your last article and then the Lonzo topic that we haven't hit on yet. And so Lucas Boyle asked, given the last pod about draft strategy and the challenge signing fitting second contracts, should we make a serious effort to extend Lonzo this offseason before he reaches free agency at the end of his contract?
No. Not a serious effort. No, because to me, he hasn't shown that he's worthy of the money that he's going to want. You look at any starting point guard around the league that is on a second contract, their average salary is around $18, $19, $20 million. Ricky Rubio's at like $19 million. There's no way you're going to go to Lonzo Ball and his agent and be like, yeah, you want like $12 million a year? He's not going to take that. And so if that's the conversation, I am not paying Lonzo Ball $19 to $20 million this summer based on what I've seen. I'm more than happy to let it go to restrict the free agency, and I'm more than happy to let him try to play out the market. If he's played well enough to where he's getting good offers, fantastic, because that's a good problem to have. But if he's at a stage where he's just still a ginormous question mark, where if his three is not working that night, what is he giving you? Great. I haven't locked myself into a long-term contract, and I'm going to approach restricted free agencies accordingly. And chances are he won't even have that much of a market by then if he continues to play the way he did.
Yeah. And so I think this is where we may disagree a little on Lonzo, is, and maybe I don't understand your position, and maybe we do agree, but you know, when given the options to A, move him now in line with that, you know, the thing, the, which you wrote recently, or B, collect another season of data and let him hit restricted free agency. Your preference would be to trade him now. Is that right?
Correct.
Yeah. And so I'm in the camp that the additional year of information you can gather about Lonzo and then just play out the restricted free agency market and let him walk for nothing. If he gets a deal that really is ridiculous. I think that the additional value of information you get supersedes the cost of maybe his value decreasing between this year and next year in terms of a trade, you know, your incoming trade value. And so,
is that because you think he has little to no value right now?
Partially. I mean, like, I don't think you're going to get that much for him. So, I mean, like, yeah, if I thought he had, I mean, it's chicken and the egg, right, though? It's like, if I thought he had value, that would also mean, like, I thought he played pretty damn well this year, and I'd be less inclined to think about moving him.
I think so, he has value merely off of young player intrigue, and some team is going to be like, yeah, he has all the intangibles, and maybe it's going to be an analytic-heavy team that looks at his great advanced numbers and be like, okay, well, great is an overstatement because he doesn't have great advanced numbers, but you know, like he ticks the boxes in a lot of those categories where he rebounds the ball and he passes the ball. He has decent steal and block rates, and people are going to look at, okay, like maybe this is the multi-positional like floor or ceiling raiser type of player that we want to trade for, and we'll be able to control his contract because, you know, it's the second time of him being traded, and he's not going to have a fantastic market. And again, I feel like all it takes is one team to talk themselves into it. And I am exploring every possibility to find that one team to talk themselves into it.
And so, fair enough. I think that makes sense. Like, it only takes one team. That's not the worst argument. We've seen that play out many times historically. I don't know. I think the real risk in my preferred path forward is having the discipline to actually let him walk for nothing rather than overpaying him. Because we know that's a concern for especially a team like New Orleans in a small market and be able to retain talent and having struggles to go get free agents. And so like there's certainly concerns and, there. I want to.
Well, the bigger concern is also like he's a piece from the AD trade. So like, there's this like enormous attachment factor of like, oh, I, you know, this is one of the main components I got back from a superstar and I let this guy walk away for nothing. What have I really done here? And so good GMs are able to look at that situation and they realize this player is not a fit and they walk. But again, there's a human element to this, and I have no idea what Griffin's going to be when it comes down to those hardball negotiations.
Yeah. One thing I've been thinking about a little bit more, and this applies broader to the huge free agent class next year. It's like, so I know that they're still talking about how to specifically handle this offseason in terms of the salary cap and maybe some of the money being held in escrow and versus, you know, not letting the cap decline significantly. But like, what about next season? Like what if we still have the situation where like we need a bubble and that the players don't go for it. And like, there's this big problem around having a real functioning season next year. Like, what happens to the cap then? If you, I mean, I, how do you protect the you know, the overall structure and integrity of the these roster constructions and salary constructions with the concern around league revenues. And I'm very, and maybe I'm being overly alarmist on this, but I am curious how it impacts the market next year and like in the salary cap and certain salaries of a bunch like players that are, it's a huge class next year. And so, and that, I mean, Lonzo's a guy who's going to be up in that class, but like what, how does that, should that factor into your decision-making at all? I'm thinking, you know, what's that kind of, I don't know. It's tough to talk about, but it's an interesting topic to me.
Yeah. So I think that to me means you stay away from an extension. Why would you commit any type of big money right now and not be certain about where the league stands from a revenue standpoint? Because if you're going to have another entire season without fans, that's potentially 40% of the revenue lost again. It's a major problem. And so what is the free agent market going to look like for non-max players at that point? Because you're always, you know, no matter what your finances are, if you have the ability to get a superstar player, you do, because you feel like, all right, everything else will work out. But why would you open the purse for anyone else? You know? And yeah. So to me, that's another reason to not lock in an extension now. And if I have to go down restricted free agency, you know, fine. But like you said, you have to have the balls to walk away from the table.
Right. But so I totally agree with that. And like, that's a good reason not to try to jump into an extension early, but also is it a good reason to let the whole next season play out, see what you got. And then, you know, maybe you can get, you know, if you're signing a guy, I mean, I don't know if players are going to start trying to take short-term contracts because of this. It's certainly a possibility. But do you think there's some sort of market inefficiency for that free agent class specifically, and signing guys to undervalued deals that'll look nice like 2 or 3 years down the line? I could argue both ways. It's just
when I think about weird cap situations and how teams behave, I feel like a team is always going to want to splurge if they feel like they have the competitive edge. And so if one team splurges, then more are going to splurge, and that's just a domino effect. Regardless, I don't think there's going to be this league-wide agreement of, we're going to kind of hold on to our purses here, because if I have the ability to get impact players and I know no one's really offering big contracts, well, then why wouldn't I offer a slightly bigger contract?
Okay.
And that's how you end up with Solomon Hill at $12 million a year.
So I've been hijacking the questions, and we've got a lot here, and there are some pretty fun ones that are tangentially basketball related, but I'll pick one. You're up.
Okay. Let's see. I thought I had a cool one, but we've definitely been sidetracked a bit. I don't know. I feel like you picked a lot of the good ones. There's some draft questions, which I'm going to avoid because you're not caught up on the draft.
I'm not.
We've touched on the Pels making the playoffs. Oh, here's one. How important would be signing a vet guard that can run the team in the offseason? JJ is great, but can only affect one aspect, which is shooting. Seems like we haven't been able to close out games since Rondo left. I guess we touched on this, where I don't necessarily think that needs to be a vet guy. Like, as you mentioned, the quality of players available at the MLE is probably not fantastic. Mm-hmm. But I do think it's a priority the Pelicans try to go after a guy like that. Yeah, I mean, I think having that lead ball handler is very, very key.
Yeah. Yeah, I agreed. And so, I mean, I guess that I don't see them making a splash there if Drew's still on the roster. I mean, I think that would be, you know, that's a luxury, I think, when you have Drew on the team. It's not a dire need, just based on the makeup of the rest of the roster. But I mean, I do think the secondary ball handler or like the second unit type guy is certainly a need until you know that Nikhil can be that guy. So that I think is more important while Drew's on the roster. But if Drew's off, then yeah, you gotta go find a guy. I don't care if he's a vet or what. It's a guy who's shown that he can be capable of filling that role. So yeah, it's a need if Drew's gone, but I don't think it's a luxury. I think if Drew's still here.
There was a question about. There are a lot of rumors out there about B.I. taking it easy to make sure he's healthy for a summer payday. Is there any truth to that? Also, a ton of rumblings about things going on internally that led to this dysfunction in the ball performance. Any intel? Okay, so two separate questions there. With B.I. taking it easy to make sure he's healthy for a summer payday, I think that's a load of crap. I think he has been pathetic on defense all season, and I'm not going to mince words there, so... If that was a reason, he should have sat out the bubble, period. And if that was true, that would, to me, be a more troubling sign of a guy just not committed to a team. And I would factor that into my decision of whether I consider him an untouchable core piece going forward. Yep. As far as a ton of rumblings about things going on internally that led to this dysfunction in the bubble performance, any intel? Yes, I do have intel here. So buckle up, folks, because here's what's going on. Here's what's going on. So basically, a lot of these issues stem from the fact that Zion had to leave and then had to be reincorporated in this bubble environment. So a couple issues with Zion leaving. Virtually no one on the team except for like Griff, Langdon, and maybe one or two other like key decision people really know why Zion left. So if you've heard anything, it's probably full of shit because they kept it very, very, very close to the chest on purpose. But it was most definitely a serious family medical issue. And if you're trying to fill in any conspiracies about Zion getting COVID or this, that, or the other, it's a load of crap. So let's just flush that right out. The second issue is the fact that Zion left for 13 days and he came back in awful shape. Well, that raised alarm bells with the medical staff and obviously Griff when it comes to reincorporating him. And I don't think anybody who watched him can deny that Zion was out of shape. I don't think anybody can deny that. So he didn't have this ramp up period. He missed time. He gained weight and he just wasn't ready. So the issue came from the fact that Griff and the medical staff wanted to sit Zion, limit his minutes. And even on the first game, so for example, the first game he played 15 minutes, that decision came last minute. And there was a lot of back and forth of whether he was even going to play. And that kind of screws over the coaches and the players because you don't know if this guy is going to be a part of your lineup or not. And then when he is, he's playing the first 3 minutes of every quarter and it's just kind of pointless. And so there is definitely dysfunction there. And there's a group of people that are partial to the coaches and have the coaches' story of this side that are trying to pin this on Griff being a power hungry, controlling dictator type executive who wants to make Alvin look bad. Because, again, they're controlling the situation with Zion, and Alvin is really left to dry because they don't know what the hell they can do with him. And Zion wants to play, and Alvin wants to play, and Griffin, the medical staff, don't want him to play. And then there's the other side of this, which is the executive side, where it's like, we're trying to protect our best asset here. I don't care what you guys want. We're not going to risk Zion getting hurt because he's out of shape. It's just doesn't make any sense. And so there is friction there, and people tried to blame that friction for the loss against the Jazz, which I found bullshit because they blew a 16-point lead. And then they try to blame that, because Zion wasn't inserted in the final player in the final minute, blah, 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 that pissed off the team, et cetera, et cetera. They try to blame that on them getting whooped by the Clippers, which I also find to be a bullshit excuse. So that is the summary of the dysfunction.
you can opt to believe whatever side you want. Maybe you're partial to the coaches. Maybe you're partial to the executive side. That's your opinion. But to me, to blame the performance on how the Zion situation was handled, I think it's a load of crap, because eventually he started playing more minutes and you guys were still doing those same things. And you can't tell me that those first two games really ruined this for you if you were really serious about winning. I just don't buy any of that. And that just seems like you're hunting for an excuse, an external reason to blame rather than taking accountability yourself.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. Like I was going to say, it would show such an extreme lack of maturity and almost entitlement to act that way. And furthermore, if you're going to act that way, I don't know any coach that's going to be able to make a difference there. Like you've got to fix your mindset.
There's this idea that because Alvin was upset, then the players were, you're just trying to connect dots that aren't there. And I'm sure players were frustrated. No doubt, you know, like you want Zion to play, you want to know what your role is, you want to know what those minutes are, no doubt about it. But is that why they lost all those games in an embarrassing fashion? No, I don't. You got to be better than that. You got to be above that. And you can't be like, oh, well, this thing didn't work out my way, so we're just going to crumble and just fold and not show up. That is not an excuse to me.
Yeah.
So that's maybe let's still. That's the tea.
Maybe let's do one more and then wrap. Anything? Is there any one question that jumps out to you that you really wanted to hit on?
No, I think you've been doing a good job of handling these questions. I know you got one for me.
All right. Well, then I got one that's really fun from Thomas Nielsen, and we're gonna talk about it. Who had the better season? 0405 Dan Dickow, 2012-2013 Grievous Vasquez, or 1920 Lonzo Ball?
I feel like Grievous had the best season for sure. That was a season he was getting. Even Chris Paul was like,
He almost led the league in assists, right?
He almost led the league in assists, and Chris Paul was like, he might be an all-star next year. And everyone was like, well, Grievous Vasquez, an all-star? Yeah. I mean, I knew that's going to happen. And so I feel like Vasquez is first. I feel like Lonzo is second, and poor Dan Dickow is third.
I was wondering how far you were going to go. And I think, oh man, I feel like of all the things we talked about on this podcast, the Lonzo stands, if any of them got, God help them, are actually still listen to this, like hate listen to us.
They do. There's a guy that listens and follows to everything I say, even though I've blocked him for months. And then he just, someone sent me his tweets and he's been tweeting about me for months and I had no idea. It's great. It is amazing.
Saying that Gravis is had a better year than Lonzo is probably the most triggering aspect. But thank you for saying Lonzo is better than Dan Dickow, because Dan Dickow in that year, like 2004-05, first of all, he played most of the year with the Hornets. He played a few games with Dallas, but he put up 12.5 and 5. I mean, like, let's not go crazy here. Dan Dickow was a fun dude to mop up minutes on a terrible Hornets team, but we gotta keep things in check here. Like, Lonzo was better than Dan Dickow. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, I think if 2012-13 Vasquez was on this team, we would have been a playoff team instead of Lonzo.
Whoa, that's a take. Sure.
For sure. I think because you knew what you were getting out of Vasquez every single night. There's no question about it. You know you're getting about 12, 13, 14 points. You know you're getting about 8, 9 assists. You know it. You can book it. You know you're getting those weird runners that he had that he would bank off the glass. You just know the steady presence. You have no clue what you're going to get out of Zion on either – I mean, not Zion, Lonzo on either end at any given night. You just don't. There's no pulse.
I am dropping this quote on Twitter, and it's going to be hilarious to see the meltdown.
Go for it. I will come at me, bro.
Let's. I think we end on that. That's fantastic.
Yeah. So that's where I'm at. And thank you for listening, and thank you to our sponsors. This has been a wrap up of part two of our podcast where we answer your questions. So thanks for listening.
Sports are coming back, and so are your chances to bet on your favorite teams and events. Major League Baseball is back in action, and there's no better place to start wagering than our exclusive partners, BetOnline. Check out all the odds, futures, and props to bet on, all available 24/7. And with the return of sports, BetOnline sat down with former pro players Eddie George, Harold Reynolds, and seven-time NBA champ Robert Horry. See what they had to say on what it'll be like playing without fans and the series they're calling Fandemic. Visit betonline.ag for all your odds and up-to-date sports news. Remember to use promo code BLUEWIRE to receive your new welcome bonus. That's promo code BLUEWIRE. BetOnline, your online wagering experts.